The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the author of a couple of brand new hardcover books that are out, Project Kane, kind of more for the younger teenage set, and Kane's Blood for everybody probably over 18, 19 years old or so. Jeffrey Gerard, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, where did you come up with this idea for two books? Same story, basically. I've never heard of this before.
It's a book about cloned serial killers. So you almost have to start, like, why would someone think of that first? Originally, it was a novella that I wrote for a magazine called Apex Digest, way back in 2007, and I'll get to it. But the magazine specialized in books that are stories that combine science fiction and horror. So I wanted to get in this magazine, and I was trying to combine science fiction and horror. And it occurred to me that I could easily rip off Jurassic Park and Boys from Brazil and make those sort of more horrible by adding the serial killer thing. You know, what's scientific? Cloning. What's horrible? Serial killers. And, you know, put the two together, and off we went. And it was published in that magazine. And it occurred to me that I could sort of dig out that old serial killer story and write something specifically for teens. And that's the book that I went off and wrote. I wrote a book about clone serial killers for teens, sent that off to my future agents who liked it, liked the writing, but said, you know, this would really work for adults, we think, better. Could you try it as an adult book? Went off for 3-4 months, wrote an adult book. They loved it, signed me up, said we can sell this. And then the exact same phone call, they said, hey, would you consider maybe also writing a teen version of this book, you know, from the point of view of just one of the teen characters and the story? Because these aren't just clone serial killers. They're clone serial killers who were made about 15, 16 years ago is when this program started. So we have a bunch of teens who were made from Ted Bundy and Jeff Dahmer and John Wayne Gacy, those type of characters who are 13, 15, 17 years old, who are just now discovering who their genetic fathers were.
So how much research did you have to do on cloning? I mean, just what, 10 years back they were doing sheep?
10 years back, 96. Dolly was 96. 96 was sheep, and 99 was monkeys. So I guess we're supposed to believe that we haven't done anything in the ensuing years is supposed to be the belief. I did a bunch of research. Research is my favorite part of writing. So usually when I write a book, I research the topics within that book for a good year before I even write a word. And this was no different. You know, the serial killer stuff was part of it, but definitely the cloning bit. And what you get is a lot of different information from different people. I mean, the cliche I've sort of been using is you ask two experts a question and they give you three answers kind of thing, that old gem. And that's what you're getting with cloning. There are all sorts of people that claim that, you know, we were doing humans 10 years ago. And in the very next article, you'll get the claim, it's impossible, we won't be able to do it for another 20 years. And back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So, you know, from a fictional point of view, it suited my needs that we were doing clones 15 years ago. So that's what we ended up with. All I'm going to say is we were doing monkeys in 1999. Surely something has happened since.
Jeffrey, in your book, Kane's Blood, now I remember a part in here where you were talking about the government and money going into this, almost a place where not even the president knew where things were going. And of course, they're not doing this to create people with good looks and everything. They're doing this for people that would like to kill, and they need killers, the services would. You did some research, I guess, on different things, or did you talk to people, or is this just in your imagination?
No, it is. Sadly, this is the part of the research that I think surprised me the most. I wasn't expecting this. I didn't realize how much money we spend on our military and how much specifically we spend on research, with our military. And believe me, I didn't go into this book wanting to be political guy or anti-military or anything like that. But once you start crunching the numbers and looking at what we're doing and just basic facts like, okay, the United States has spent more on weapons than the rest of the world combined and has for the last 40 years. And that's okay, I guess we kind of know that, but you don't really stop to think about it, most of us, as we go about our lives. And you stop to look at that, and then you start to look at the amount of money that's being spent and how much of it is in these black budgets that you're talking about, which are set aside so that literally the president of the United States does not know some of what's being done in these special projects, because they're hidden, they're black, they're out of the way in the military. That way they can do things and, you know, deniability and all that good stuff. I think I put in the book that it was a long time before Truman knew, I guess the hydrogen bomb came second, you know, that we had it. You know, they've been doing it for months. It was like, yeah, maybe someone should tell the president we're ready to go on this. So that was surprising. The amount of money we spend on things and the amount of stuff that's hidden, apologies that come 20 years after the fact. Oh, sorry, we were dropping LSD on these people, American cities. You know, we were testing chemicals on these people. We were injecting stuff. We were injecting plutonium into our citizens shortly after we invented the atom bomb. We started putting plutonium and radiated material into American citizens just to see, you know, what will happen if we actually use these bombs. And then 20 years later, an apology comes, and it's far enough away that we're thinking about other stuff. We got other issues going on. So part of the fun, in a weird way, from a fictional point of view, is, you know, what will be apologized for 20 years from now.
So you won't find yourself sleeping in an airport in Russia, right?
That's, you know, I love the sharing of information. We'll just leave it at that. There was certainly one night I got a little panicky with some of the research I was doing. I'm like, okay, I've officially become one of those conspiracy guys. But we've done some pretty terrible stuff in the name of military science. And that's facts admitted by the government. Again, apologized for publicly, money paid out. But it's in the past, so move on, right?
Well, I knew somebody in the Army who was discharged because he had to go through some experimentation with LSD in order for him to get out, because he was caught with some drugs.
And, okay.
You know, a dishonorable discharge, not probably good. He had told his mother. He was really paranoid when he got out, reading the Bible, and finally committed suicide. But that's an unfortunate story. But the government has never said that they did what he was saying they did.
Right.
One thing, the invisibility, I thought that was kind of cool, I guess. The government.
Oh, the different kinds of things that they've messed with.
The weather, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. The weather one is the new part of the new project I'm working on. Invisibility, that, I mean, yeah, that's just on the laundry list. I think they've sort of played with everything. God, there was just an article yesterday in the paper, I feel, on like something with telekinetic powers or something like that, and working with those kinds of people. We've been at war since Pearl Harbor. That's another thing people don't really think about when you start adding the dates and thinking about, we have been at war since Pearl Harbor. So we're always thinking of new ways to do things to people. And so, yeah, the weather weapons is certainly one of them. They've looked into, the Navy has done stuff, has moved tornadoes and stuff like that, and hurricanes, and the Army's done all sorts of things. There's all sorts of needles up in the ionosphere and stuff that they've tried to do. And yeah, you know, they're playing. We've been busy boys for the last 50, 60 years.
Well, in Kane's Blood and Project Kane, of course, the government busy again, taking blood from serial killers, and maybe not necessarily blood, but DNA, making, producing, creating these kids that they hope will be kind of an offspring of where they come from. Tell us a little bit about the project that you write about here.
The part of it. Well, what they really want is, it's not like they want these kids to grow up and become serial killers, and that's, you know, it's going to be this evil army of serial killers or anything like that. They want the genetics. There is science that suggests, as, you know, as we argue about every day with all sorts of other things, is it nature or is it nurture? You know, are people, what, are you a homosexual because you were born that way, or is it a choice, or this or that, the other thing? Are you a sociopath because you were born that way? Are you a good football player? But, you know, where do these things come from? And scientists, more and more, you know, there are these things called anger genes that they're studying. You know, is there a reason why the Hemingway family, there you go, there's the Hemingway thing returned. You know, is there a reason why so many of them commit suicide? Is that genetic? Are they just, you know, a gloomy family? And no, you know, there's an iron deficiency, or it's too much iron, I think, with those guys. But these things are genetic. So what they want is the genes. And there is some belief that the ability for violence, the ability to be a sociopath is a genetic mutation in human beings. Either between 1 to 4% of all human beings have this. You know, it's the idea of, can you harness that? Can you take that? So these guys are more like factories. They just want their blood. They don't want them to go out and do damage. They want their blood so they can take that and make, you know, some horrible biotoxin, which of course they do in this book, to drop on a city or to make a super soldier or to train our soldiers to be violent for the year they're in Iraq. But then when they come back, sort of take it out of them. So they don't have to deal with that, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder that so many of them come back with. You know, their numbers, you know, sort of making these up or whatever, but just in World War One, World War Two, how many guys would actually shoot or whatever? They've done studies on this and they're like, oh, we got to get our guys killing more people. It's what we do. And so by Vietnam, they figured out, let's have them shoot at human targets. We got really good at killing people. Now we shoot at human targets that are like 3D stuff squirts out and people pop around and our guys are unbelievable. They kill with the best. It's tough to turn off, you know, when they come home. So this idea that genetically you could make someone who's not a killer, that is not instinctive. Human beings, we don't. I mean, that's sort of statistically proven out in previous wars. We don't like to kill other human beings. And so it's tough to train us to do that. And if you've been at war for 50 years and you need people who can do that, you know, if I can just give you a little shot and make you a sociopath who doesn't care if someone lives or dies, probably not a bad idea.
Same story, one maybe a little more gory. Maybe what would you say?
Right, well, after that spiel I just gave, yeah, for teenagers. So, you know, the Project Cain one is a good one. I think it's sort of, I call it sort of my serial killer 101 book. The book works in a lot of nonfiction, more so than Cain's Blood, which is sort of a straight up traditional thriller. Project Cain is more for like a high school kid, 12, 13, 18. Who just is kind of interested in the serial killer thing, but doesn't really know that much about it. I think you'd be okay picking this book up. PG-13, definitely. It is written for that group. Cain's Blood is definitely more R, I guess you could say. I mean, adults are allowed to talk and act like adults, but more importantly, it follows the format of a traditional thriller more. You know, one of the blurbs says, you know, Crichton Meek's King, and I'll certainly bring it up here because I'm honored to have that. But you know, that was the goal I was going for there. It's a sort of the real science, quote unquote, of Michael Crichton, that kind of thing, and mixed with, you know, I grew up as a Stephen King guy like so many other people, so that kind of horror element.
What would happen if you would go home one day and there's your dad and all of a sudden he says that your life isn't really what you thought it was?
Yes.
Well, this happens in these books. Tell me a little bit about that. And there's a secret room.
Yeah, anytime your dad has a secret room, watch out, right?
I think that happened in Cleveland.
Yes, exactly. The secret room has dead bodies from, you know, 1880s London, the guy who might be the Jack the Ripper. Yeah, the main character of Project Cain, who also shows up in Cain's Blood, is Jeff Jacobson, who's 16 years old, and his father has just come into his room, as you've described, and laid down a folder and said, hey, you've really only been alive about 8 years. And you're actually the clone of Jeffrey Dahmer. And we made you in a lab, and people will probably come and kill you now because I got other stuff I need to go do because I'm a bad guy scientist type, and I'm going to go take off and do my thing. And you're sort of on your own, kid. And that's the starting ground for Jeff, and it follows him as he sort of comes to terms with. Most teen books are about discovering who you are. So I try to flip that on its ear a little bit, and Jeff knows exactly who he is. You know, here's a folder. Here is who you are. Genetically, and he needs to wrestle with that. And my fun with that was the nature-nurture thing. Now, Jeffrey Dahmer, who I spent a lot of time with before writing this book, and so much so I put in the book, my oldest son asked me to please stop talking about Jeffrey Dahmer. I spent a lot of time with the guy, and I got more and more interested in what if. Different parents, different time, different, you know, alcoholic by 15. Well, you know, we're early 1970s, a homosexual kind of thing with parents who are sort of divorcing at the time. Not one of those things, but, you know, make it 2013. People are a little more accepting of folks who they really are. And, you know, maybe the parents aren't fighting as much. And maybe, you know, if I just take one of those elements out, would that story have gone the way, unfortunately, that it did? And so that's what I can do with this kid. Physiologically, is he Jeffrey Dahmer? Yes. Were there physiological issues that perhaps created emotional detachment with people, prone to alcoholism, prone to weird speech and not being able to sort of connect with other human beings at the quote unquote normal level. Yes. So I wanted to take that kid and give him just a couple more tools in his belt to survive that and see what would happen. And he does okay.
Well, some of the kids, I mean, they're in this more or less like a college, if you will, or a classroom setting.
Yeah.
And they are under, they are studied, of course, and almost like medicine, they have things that they're going to do with these kids. I mean, some of the kids with the DNA are going to be beaten. Some of them are going to be loving.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of weird, I guess, isn't it?
It is weird, and it's rough. That's that nature-nurture stuff. And I'm going to blame the evil scientist for that, not myself. But the guy in charge of this project is sort of, he wants to know himself. He himself has terrible, violent thoughts that he carries out. And he wants to blame genetics for that. He doesn't want to take the blame himself. I'm this because my father was that. I'm as opposed to I'm this because I'm a bad guy and I've made bad choices. So he's so determined to prove that it's a genetics that he creates these tests where, yes, he takes half the guys and raises them normal. Whatever quote unquote normal is. That's my last quote unquote of the thing. Whatever normal is. And then the other half, he has them raised in the way that their original genetic selves were raised. And most of these serial killers, the names that we know, had very violent childhoods. They were beaten. They were severely neglected. They were sexually abused. And he has these sort of carried out, you're right, by prescription. It's like, on Tuesday, I want little Johnny to be beaten by his stepfather. And just to see the results. Yeah, dark stuff. But I will say, it's not once I'm like, where do I come up with this stuff? But I forget what university, I think University of Indiana, don't sue me. I don't think, I'm not 100% sure. A major university in the Midwest, right before World War II, was doing tests on positive and negative reinforcement. And so they got a hold of like 20 kids, 10 who stuttered really badly, 10 who spoke normally. This is called like the monster test, I think is the nickname it's gotten. You can look it up online. And the stutterers, they praised, and they said, oh, you speak so well. And the kids who spoke perfectly normal, they said, oh, you're an idiot. Stop talking like that. Say it again. Why are you stuttering like an idiot? Wonderful test to be conducted by a major university. Needless to say, the stutterers improved slightly, and the kids who talked perfectly normal, these lovely little orphans that they found to conduct such tests on, were like stuttering goofs by the end of this test, who suffered depression most of their lives. One of them committed suicide afterwards. And it's just, this is a test that was conducted that was very quickly swept away. The guy won major awards and went on to be in charge of all sorts of interesting things. But, after World War II and how much the Nazis had sort of upped the game on such testing, it was swept away.
Who's your favorite serial killer of all time and why?
My favorite serial killer.
This is a lot of research.
Yeah, my favorite way to get punched in the face is my favorite serial. Dahmer became my main character for a reason. I wanted the little kid to be Dahmer for a reason. Of all of them, Dahmer's the one that for me was hardest to explain. His parents weren't, it wasn't the greatest marriage on earth. They fought and stuff like that. Eventually turned into a pretty nasty divorce in which the house, they split and he was alone in the house for too long, I think, for a 17-year-old kid. But, I wonder what happened to him. Not beaten, not that we know, sexually abused as a kid or anything like that. It's just he is the most normal in the group. So he caught my interest as the one that really fascinated, because he's also the one that, like, for some reason terrifies the heck out of everyone. Like, he's sort of like the last big one that's hit. So everyone remembers him, and he ate all these people, and that's another issue. But so he's a terrible monster with that. But when I was doing my research, I'm looking at pictures of the kid, and he's 12 years old in a swimming pool or whatever. And I'm like, 14 years old, smile, sitting there, perfectly normal kid. At 18, he'd murdered someone. And, what the hell happened? So he interests me the most. If you can call that my favorite, we'll take it as my favorite.
Well, I guess I should say which was the favorite to research.
Would definitely be him. And I sadly got have a soft spot or whatever for Dahmer a little bit. I think I just spent so much time with him as a little kid. And that's always the risk with any criminal, isn't it? When you sort of spend time with them, you look at them
up to 14, it's just this little kid, and then it always becomes what the heck happened. So part of it is reminding yourself 18 on, you know, and you have to do that.
I guess I've always looked at people like that, also kids, and wonder what they're going to be like when they get older, you know?
Yes, yes.
Project Cain, Cain's Blood, a fantastic storyline on this. I'm sure that you've got some friends and stuff that have read the manuscript on this book, or even the book. What have you heard from people that have read it?
I like, you know, when people keep bringing up names like Crichton and King, I don't mind that at all. And that's coming from like real writers and reviewers and things like that. Admittedly, I am a little surprised sometimes at people how talk about how dark the book is. That I think that has taken me a little bit. I don't know why. Maybe that shows how dark I am as a person or something. But you know, it's they're getting fairly good reviews. Cain's Blood, everyone, that's the adult one, and no complaints there. Everyone seems to like that one. They say it's very dark, but very Stephen King, very Michael Crichton. And in Project Cain, you sort of mix reviews. People either love it or hate it. Admittedly, part of what interests me is the only people reviewing it so far are adults. It's kind of weird. You write a book for a 14-year-old boy, and it gets mailed out to 200 adults, you know. So it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. I worked in a lot of nonfiction into it. Specifically, there are studies that suggest that boys and men, in particular, prefer nonfiction to fiction. I mean, that just carries out by the books that they read and buy. So I purposely wanted to make this book more nonfiction. Boy readers are the most reluctant readers. And with a boy protagonist, and that's sort of what I was going for here. So I work in a lot more nonfiction. I think a lot of people are turned off by that. And it's written in a specific way for 14-year-olds. So I don't know. I'll let you know when a couple of 14-year-olds let me know. My son refused to read it until it was out in hardback. So it's sitting on his desk waiting.
Project Cain, Cain's Blood, both great books. How did you go about starting this project, the writing part of this? What's the day in the life of Jeffrey Gerard?
Day in the life of, well, that's a whole nother story, but the day in the life of writer Jeffrey Gerard is, I'm a planner. I have, after a year of research, in most cases, and if I write a short story, I'll read three books. I mean, I'll spend a month researching something before I even write a very short story. So for a book like this, you know, I'll research for a year, and then I sit down and think about a beginning and an end. I always have the beginning, and I have a pretty good idea of the end. And then you sort of see how you point your characters toward that end. I always describe it as, you know, I'm from Jersey originally. So, okay, I'm going to go back home and visit Jersey. And I'm not sure in what shape I'm going to end up there, or who I'm going to be with, or, you know, what rappers are going to be at the bottom of the car, or the business, you know, the car, what time, or anything like that. I just know that that's where I need to get to. And then the fun comes in, you know, who do you meet on the way, and what little adventures happen on your way to Jersey. And so far, I've always gotten, following the analogy through, I always get there to the end, and it's just, you know, it's fun to see and what condition your characters are in.
A lot of times authors say, you know, the characters, they just spoke to me and they wanted to go this way or that way. That happened to you?
A little bit. Jeff took over his book, the adult book. There are a lot of characters on the screen. They all sort of had their own little voices. Admittedly, I might be too much of a bully a little bit on that book. Maybe I'm getting too much into the writer craft here. I didn't let the characters run too free in that one. Jeff's book is Jeff's book. It's told first person point of view, and that is very important to me as a writer. If something's first person, that means a particular person is telling a story for a reason at a particular time. You know, is it a day after an event, during, 2 years after, 10 years after, that kind of thing. That matters to me very much as a writer and a reader. So when it was Jeff's book first person, this teenage kid, he took over. I mean, believe me, I'm taking some hits on the book. Again, people love it and some don't. And it's just like, it's not me, it's Jeff. You know, what was I going to do? It's not the way I would tell a story. The way I would tell a story is Cain's Blood. That is the way I speak and the way I would tell a story. Project Cain is the way a genetic sociopath might tell a story if he was, you know, only been alive 8 years and just found this out and has these sort of social issues that run through. He's a little more emotionally detached than I am. And so he's sometimes a hard nut to crack, as it were. And the real Jeff is, he's in there and he shows up. And I think the people who really like the book see that. They sort of take the time and he pops out, he shines at moments. But, you know, I don't imagine the real Jeff Dahmer would have been a thrill to talk to at 14. It would have been a tough kid to talk to. it would have taken a little time to get to the real kid. So this book tries to do that.
Jeffrey, let's find out if you have a website where we can find out more information about Project Kane for those teenagers, or Kane's Blood if you like the adult version.
Okay, the website's real easy, except for the spelling, is Jeffrey Gerard, which is GeoffreyGerard.com, JeffreyGerard.com. My mom gave me the funny G spelling because she thought it would look nice in print someday, so thank you, Mom.
And I'll tell you what, you know, I was in the bookstore the other day. I saw it up there, and it looks fantastic.
Doesn't that look great?
All right. When we go to the website, what do we see real quick?
So you'll see the other stuff I've written. These are my first two novels, but I've also written several other books. Those were for teens as well. Yeah, teens, young readers, adults. Collections of short stories that are based on folklore and history and a little bit of fiction. One on pirates, one on Indians. And one on the Jersey Devil is actually up there as well for you Jersey folk out there, or you know, monster fans. And you'll find that out there. And I guess find out where I'm going to be heading and where you might see me and what I'm working on next.
There you go. All right. Yeah. The book Project Kane, of course, speak from the Jeffrey Dahmer boy in this one. I tell you what, I found that very interesting. You get to get inside of his mind, you get to see what Jeffrey Dahmer is like, according to Jeffrey Gerard. In Kane's Blood, man, I tell you what, you've got this guy right off the bat where he's a monk and he's out counting peas, and then he's counting bees, and he goes back to vegetation, trying to find out the DNA. This is long before anybody thought anything about that, and from there it just gets better. Jeffrey, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Jeffrey Gerard, author of Project Kane and Kane's Blood. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.